Hello, this is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. There's a phrase that's been used for generations when introducing someone, and the phrase is, and now someone who needs no introduction. John Schreiner, to wine fans in Canada and around the world, he is the dean of Canadian wine, taking us through the journeys of growing and creating and enjoying wines in Canada. For over 40 years in newspaper and magazine articles and columns and podcasts, and through 19 books, John has flown the flag for wines in Canada. Not bad for a guy from Indian Head, Saskatchewan. The book has just come out. It's called Good Grog, A Life in Wine and Journalism. We're going to lean on the wine part of this book and the front photo cover of John looking like a spy, perhaps in Vienna, was taken on a wine journey by Dana Van Mulligan. Well done. Good Grog, A Life in Wine and Journalism. Here's our conversation with John Schreiner, a man who does not need an introduction. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. There's a new chef at the Unsworth Bistro. He's Dan Bain. Come and meet the chef and his culinary talents. And at the same time, you might want to shop for some bubble. Charm de Lille and Charm de Lille Rosé is available in the tasting room. And a reminder from Unsworth that the month of August is Wine Festival in the Cowichan Valley, and it all kicks off July the 27th at Brentwood School College. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. John Schreiner and I are doing a Zoom call. I don't think we've ever done one before, John, an actual Zoom where I can see you in your study. And it allows me to not only talk to you on Tasting Room Radio, but also on YouTube, and hold up the book, because you can't do this on radio. You can't do this with audio. There's Good Grog, John's new book. Actually, the subtitle is A Life in Wine and Journalism. And thank you for this. I appreciate it very much. What number is this now, John? How many?
I guess there are 23 books that I've written over most of my life. There were 20 wine books, and then there was one I did very early on, a little resource book for high schools and transportation. That was my Training Wheels book.
Yes.
And
wow.
And then I did I had a commission to do the history of BC Sugar, the Rogers family.
Yes.
Which was one of the best books I've ever done, and also one of the most remunerative.
It's, you know, what I learned from doing my own book was that don't expect money to come back your way. You can get books, you can go on record as having told your story, but don't try to build a lifetime of dough coming your way like some thriller writer. There's not a lot of money to be made, and actually publishing is shrinking, is it not?
Yes. This book, Good Grog, was self-published because my regular publisher of my wine books, wasn't interested. It doesn't fit their catalog.
Yes.
I poked around a bit to see who else, and I wasn't getting a great deal of interest. I mean, I'm not that eminent that people would, I'm not Barack Obama, that people would throw millions of dollars in advances at me. So it's self-published, and if you want to buy the book, you've got to buy it from my basement.
Wow.
Oh, there's a few other places now. I've got it distributed in a number of places in the wine industry.
By the way, could I say that the photo, what was the thinking behind the photo? Because you look like you're a sinister secret agent looking for information in Moscow, for example.
Well, it hadn't been my idea to have a photo of myself on the cover to begin with. I was looking through my computer for photographs to send to them they could use in the book, and that one popped up, and I thought, well, why not? That's a good strong photograph.
That's strong.
Dana Van Mulligan took it. We were together on some wine tour. Nice. I don't remember where, about 5 or 6 years ago. And I'd even forgotten that she'd taken the photograph, and it was only later on that I managed to catch it in time so I could give her credit. The book, the cover designer for the book, came back with three cover choices, and one was an anodyne sort of vineyard picture, and I can't remember what the other one was. And then there was this one, and I thought, I even though I don't have that kind of an ego, it's a strong, strong cover.
You look like a gunman for hire, for Pete's sake. Now, you said that you made the comment that the book didn't fit somebody's needs and wants. For those of us who are have a life in wine with you, a life in wine, I understand that's the attraction for me on this book. And but then the journalism part, you've been writing a long time. And one thing led to another, and then you put the two of them together. So this is basically your life in one book.
Yes. Yeah, as I said to somebody recently, in fact, I was at a book signing where nobody bought any books, and somebody came up to me and said, "Oh, I have all your other books." And I said, "Well, this one sums up my career." And he nodded and walked away. Hopefully he'll remember.
It comes easily to you, John. At least it appears to, it reads like that. And but you kept diaries, you all the way along.
I started keeping a diary in 1956, even before I'd, or just when I'd gone to university. And I mean, it's not, I don't sit down and write something every day. I
Sure.
will ent make an entry once a week, sometimes once a month, sometimes every day. When I was going on wine tours, I made very long entries in my diary. So it was quite a large diary. And then I'd also been keeping clippings, and I have clippings going back to 1971 of not only the things that I wrote in the Financial Post, but the articles I did for other publications. I did, as you will have noted from that memoir, a tremendous amount of freelancing.
Yeah.
And it's just it's it wasn't that we needed the money that or I initially, yes, when I started freelancing back in the 60s, I needed the money. I was my salary was less than $300 a month, but subsequently, I just loved to write, period, and I loved to write about wine, so I would jump at every opportunity, almost every opportunity, to write about it.
I'll tell you what attracted me, John. We'll cut straight to it because there's so many stories to tell. I like the start of the book about the North Vancouver Vintners Association, the Vintners of North Vancouver. How many were there? And I know that you went through the wine kit thing, and then you got your hands on real fruit. It actually came from Washington State. The best thing about it was that it taught you about winemaking and it helped you speak to those winemakers in the field.
Very much. Well, when I started, when I got interested in the kits, because when we were still living in Toronto, my wife and I, there was a couple of blocks away on one of the main streets, there was a store called Wineart. Wineart was a franchise that had been started by a fellow who lived in British Columbia, and there were stores, amateur winemaking equipment,
Sure.
and concentrates, and so on. And I used to go into that store every once in a while, just sort of hang around and chat with a guy. Never got around to buying myself a kit. And my wife ultimately gave me a kit for Christmas, and then we moved out here. And once we got settled, I decided, well, let's fire up the kit. The wines were not very good, but the process made me curious. And then I happened to mention to a colleague in the office that I was a little bit puzzled by this whole business of making wine. And she said, "Oh, you live in the North Shore. There's a winemaking club. I'll introduce you to the people there." And I think at that time there probably were about 20 members, and we used to meet once a month. Very enthusiastic group. I think the membership now is probably closer to 30 or 35. It's still going. I'm still a member. I'm a member for social reasons,
Wow.
not for winemaking. I have a life membership sort
Sure
of
you
thing.
do. Sure you do.
But I learned, I would, these guys gave me the sort of the basic lessons as to how to approach making wine. And once I got going, I started getting textbooks and I then when I was interviewing in the wine industry, particularly the winemakers, I would pick their brains shamelessly to learn how to make my wines better. And I think the fact that I was making wine made me more comfortable talking to them.
Sure.
I was almost peer to peer, not quite, but because I wasn't the level of most of these people, but I knew what they were talking about.
We're going to talk about how far the BC wine industry, the Canadian wine industry, has come with John after we take a break here. He's John Schreiner. Good Grog is the name of the book, A Life in Wine and Journalism. Good Grog is the name of his blog, by the way, from Friesen Press. When we come back, we're going to talk about the characters in John's book. He has crossed the path of an astonishing amount of characters, and he details them in the book. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. There's a new chef at the Unsworth Bistro. He's Dan Bain. Come and meet the chef and his culinary talents. And at the same time, you might want to shop for some bubble. Charme de Lille and Charme de Lille Rosé is available in the tasting room. And a reminder from Unsworth that the month of August is Wine Festival in the Cowichan Valley, and it all kicks off July the 27th at Brentwood School College. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mooncursor Vineyards in Osoyoos. Have you ever wanted to join a wine club? This may very well be the one. Five of their wines were made in small quantities and are available exclusively to wine club members. The Carmenere 2021, an Okanagan Carmenere. Contraband Syrah 2021. 2021 Eclipse, a sparkling Broussin Marsan blend. Petit Verdot 2021 and Tenat 2019. So many perks. You can find all the details at mooncursor.com. Welcome back. John Schreiner is with me, the Dean of Wine Writers in Canada. The book is called Good Grog, A Life in Wine and Journalism. When you see it, buy it, please, just in time for Christmas. You never got drawn into it, to making wines in a vineyard. You never got drawn into it.
I never really had the time or the ambition or
okay.
probably even the capital
okay.
to buy a vineyard. But I was happy making 100 gallons a year and judging wine and writing about it. I had neither the time nor the ambition. In those days, I guess I would have had the capital. Back, you could have gotten into the wine industry fairly cheaply in 1985. Today, it's like trying to buy a house in Vancouver.
John, let's talk about the life in wine. You were in the right place at the right time with the right credentials in order to document the growth of the BC wine industry. As an overview, could you have imagined we have the wine industry that we have today? When did you become aware that this was really getting serious and it was about to just lift off?
Well, I took it seriously before a lot of people did. I have said more than once that I was a friend of the British Columbia wine industry before it had friends.
Yeah.
I started judging in the Okanagan in the early 80s. I watched the development of the wines. I began to see the impact that was being made with the white European grape varieties like Ehrenfelser and Riesling and so on that were being planted, started being planted in the 70s. The reds, for the most part, the reds that were then grown before the pullout in 88, the red varieties were not very good wine grapes. Or if they were good wine grapes, they were not grown well. But the whites made very good wines, and wineries like Grey Monk and Geringer Brothers, for example, were always winning, sweeping up the gold medals at the competitions. I got very encouraged by that, to the point that I did my first wine book in 1984, and this was wines across Canada. And I spent a lot of time in Ontario, visited a number of wineries there. Tasted some of the wines. I came up with the same conclusion that the whites that they were making were stronger than the Reds, for the same reason that the varieties weren't terribly good. On I remember on that trip going to Quebec and Nova Scotia. Now, Quebec, with the exception of one serious vineyard, had no serious wineries. I don't think they were making wines from concentrates and that sort of stuff. Seagram's, of all people, had a winery near the Dorval Airport, and I went there to interview them one day. Spent a lovely morning interviewing all of these people, and they took me for lunch. There was no wine had been tasted yet, and at lunch, when they ordered whiskey, I thought, they sent me samples of the wines, and they were not drinkable. And in Nova Scotia, though, every once in a while you stumble across these things. There was a guy named Roger Dial that I
That's
met
right.
there.
Yes, I know him.
You know Roger, and Roger was just starting Grand Pré Vineyards. He ultimately ran out of money. It's still an operation with different owner, but Roger was he was one of those charismatic characters. Just spending time with him, I got excited about the potential for
Larger than
Nova.
life, yes.
And so you kept bumping into these people who were who believed in what they were doing.
How about Sam Baptiste?
Sam, it's interesting. I've got a I'm yes, I'm and I'm just going to post the blog in the next few days as well on Sam, because Sam has been managing the Inkame Vineyard since 1987. And before that, he was chief of the Osoyoos Indian Band. Sam's made a number of really major contributions. The first being that when he was chief of the band, Bright's Winery, which was a predecessor to Jackson Triggs, approached the band and said, "Can we lease some land on the reserve, just some land north of Oliver, where there is now the Jackson Triggs Winery? Can we lease some land and put a winery there?" And a lot of other chiefs said to Sam, "Who? Whoa! What are you thinking? Alcohol is one of the biggest problems on reserve, and you're going to have a winery making an alcoholic beverage?" And Sam said he thought about it. He said it was none of their business, and he approved it. And that's now become the largest, I think, one of the largest wineries in British Columbia. The Inkame Vineyard, which is now 300 acres, is one of the largest vineyards. And the Osoyoos Indian Band has leased over 1,000 acres of vineyard land, mostly to Jackson Triggs and their successor companies. Sam had a major, major impact just by approving that winery.
And he knew his land too. He knew his soils, and he knew that valley really, really well. And people wanted to plant. They went to Sam just to ask about water and distribution of clay and everything that they're going to have to deal with, rattlesnakes. And you can still talk to him at the District Wine Village in
Yeah, he's got a he put together with some partners his own small winery called Apricus,
That's right.
Apricus. It's a Latin word,
I'll say hello to him for you.
and the
How
wines are very good.
Joe Busnardo?
Joe, now Joe is another character. Joe was from Italy, from Treviso. Immigrated to the Okanagan. Eventually, he was a heavy duty, I think, mechanic or construction worker. He decided, though, to buy some vineyard property, and he bought not just a small patch of land. He bought about 70 acres on what's now the Golden Mile, one of those peninsulas that comes out from the side of the mountains. And Joe decided to plant only vinifera, and did. And when this was 1968, when the grapes started growing, he went around looking for contracts from the wineries, and the wineries either wouldn't give him a contract or they wouldn't pay him a premium. And he thought his grapes, because they were vinifera, were worth much more than the hybrids that other people were growing. And so Joe, for a while, just ignored the vineyard. When he got back to it, he decided, well, he's going to open his own winery and show them what could be done, and did. Now, unfortunately, Joe was a really good grape grower. He was not much of a winemaker, and so his wines were invariably rustic.
Well, they're in good shape now because Hester Creek has them, and they always tip their hat to him when those old vines come out. And Joe's not too far from me. He's only 3-4 kilometers from where I'm talking to you now. He's
Yeah, I haven't seen Joe for a few years, but I'm sure he's still as crusty as he
very
ever
crusty.
was.
I've tried to ask him about his wines, and all he wanted to talk about was politics. That was it. But
Oh,
I knew that going in, John. I knew that it was going to be just like that. You got what you got with Joe.
I've never talked politics with him. I do remember tasting with him, Terry. Joe doesn't believe in spitting.
No.
You
No,
come out of there, you
he
come out
doesn't.
of there looped.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor Vineyards in Osoyoos. Have you ever wanted to join a wine club? This may very well be the one. Five of their wines were made in small quantities and are available exclusively to wine club members. The Carmenere 2021, an Okanagan Carmenere. Contraband Syrah 2021. 2021 Eclipse, a sparkling Broussin-Marsan blend. Petit Verdot 2021 and Tanat 2019. So many perks. You can find all the details at mooncursor.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench, one of the originals. They are thrilled to announce that their 2016 Mosaic recently received an outstanding 95 points from the one and only John Schreiner, Dean of Canadian Wine Writers. Mosaic, made with 5 of the 6 varieties allowed in the Bordeaux region of France, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca. Tasty Room Radio, John Schreiner. Good Grog is the name of the book, A Life in Wine and Journalism. This is what it looks like. This is John himself when he's buffed and ready to go, when he's working with the help of Dana Van Mulligan, the photographer. Realize that I'm not talking about your family. Well, I can't talk about everything, but I can talk about the characters in your book, because the characters are what became our industry. For example, Harry McWaters. You got to walk step lock with Harry through his formative years and watch the explosion of his winery.
Yes, I got to know Harry when he was still working at a winery called Casabello. Harry had been the sales manager for Casabello. Now, I didn't know Harry terribly well there because I spent a lot of time with the owner of Casabello, who was extremely helpful, gave me a lot of time. I educated me tremendously on the wine industry. Harry teamed up with a guy named Lloyd Schmidt, who was a grape grower. The two of them put together the Sumac Ridge Winery, which sadly is just being closed.
Yes.
But that was and the genius, and Harry was one of these guys who always figured a way to do things that, even though the regulations militated against it, Harry would find a way around the regulations. He used to say, "Forgiveness is easier than permission," and so when he bought a Sumac Ridge, it was half of a golf course, and he kept the other half. Continued to be a golf course, I think still is,
still
at
is
Summerland.
Yeah.
But he kept the clubhouse as the tasting room for the winery, but it also meant that the winery could serve food and could serve its wines in the clubhouse. This was when dining rooms were not allowed in wineries.
Yes.
And Harry had, I think, probably 10 years of having the only dining establishment in a BC winery. And Harry Harry was farsighted. He realized that the industry's reputation needed some burnishing, and so he brought in the VQA concept from Ontario, and VQA means that the wines were approved by a VQA panel, Vintners Quality Alliance. You know, basically what it means is that the wines are made from grapes grown in British Columbia. In this case, the public quickly recognized the VQA symbol and would buy those wines in preference to the other wine.
We had a long way to go, John, as you well know. It seemed that with John Symes and people like him bringing their knowledge to the valley, it just made us so much better. Because not only would they make their wines, but other wineries and winemakers would be schooled on what they were doing, and they could taste the results. It just made everybody better.
Oh yeah, as a result of the impact that a guy like Symes had, Quailsgate very soon thereafter hired a winemaker from Australia. And so now there were two, and then Hester Creek hired it was Jackson Triggs hired a viticulturalist from Australia. Ooh. and so on. So these people, Australia had at least two really good wine schools. We had kind of what passed for a wine school in Ontario, but nothing much in the Okanagan. So you had to bring in talent from outside. There's an amazing number of New Zealanders and Australians in the BC wine industry, and a lot of BC winemakers have gone to New Zealand to train as winemakers and have come back and had a huge impact on the quality of the product. And also the viticulturalists. Tinhorn Creek hired an Australian. I think Andrew Moon is from Australia in 2008. 2 years after he was there, you noticed a significant rise in the quality of their wines from what he was doing in the vineyard.
Sure.
I mean, I think one of the biggest reasons that the wines have gotten so much better so fast is that a lot of well-trained viticulturalists have come into the industry. Mission Hill, Anthony von Mandel, always hired good viticulturalists.
Sure.
He was one of the first to recognize the necessity of that.
Yeah. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench, one of the originals. They are thrilled to announce that their 2016 Mosaic recently received an outstanding 95 points from the one and only John Schreiner, Dean of Canadian Wine Writers. Mosaic, made with 5 of the 6 varieties allowed in the Bordeaux region of France, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the Okanagan Wine Festivals. If you go to their website, there is a page full of festivals on Dolcetto and Bastille and Bench Dinner Tasting, the Faro in the Vineyard, the Kelowna Polo Classic, the Festival of Albarino, and then mark your calendars for Silver Star Wine Festival, Rock the Lake Music Festival, and the Ambleside Music Festival. All the details can be found at thewinefestivals.com. John Schreiner is with me, the Dean of Wine Writers in Canada. The book is called Good Grog, A Life in Wine and Journalism. It's a great read, John. And there's more characters. I'll give you a list of a couple of characters. You pick one that you'd like to talk about. It's either Dave Barrett or the Bennetts, Tommy Douglas, Jim Pattison, the Gallo brothers, the Fitzpatrick family.
Let's talk about Jimmy Pattison.
Okay.
Because Jimmy and I both come from Saskatchewan. He's done a little better than I did.
He did a lot better than most people. Yes,
I got to interview him on a number of times, and I have to say that Jimmy, it was invariably polite. Invariably returned phone calls. There was one episode. Jimmy has still owns a house in Palm Springs that was Frank Sinatra's house, and the circumstantial evidence looks like Jimmy sold the house. So I filed the story right on deadline time. And about a half an hour later, my phone rings. It's Jim Pattison. And Jim's, oh, no, I'm not selling it. I would love to keep it. So I thank God he saved me from being a complete fool. And I could correct the story. And I was in visiting, I think the last time I interviewed Jimmy, I was in his office. His butler then came in, and Jimmy hadn't had any lunch yet. And Jimmy said to the butler, well, what can I have? And the butler says, can you believe it? Anything you want, Mr. Pattison. So Jimmy ordered a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and offered me one too.
Yes. Nothing but the best. I hope it was crunchy peanut butter. John's book, by the way, is called Good Grog, A Life in Wine and Journalism. That's it in a nutshell. It's out now. He's the pride of Indian Head, Saskatchewan. What is the provincial flower of Saskatchewan, sir?
I think it's the lily.
It's a lily. You're absolutely right. It's on Joni Mitchell is holding it. She painted herself holding it on her second album of her career. And that I think it's just called Red Lily. Retired but still actively writing, John lives in North Vancouver with his wife, Marlene. They have 3 adult children and 8 grandchildren. When not writing, reading, or enjoying winemaking or tasting, Schreiner enjoys photography, cycling, and hand-to-hand combat. I made that up. Is this your last book, John?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I've got a couple of other ideas I could approach, but, you know, okay. My wife needs me to do other things around here. I can't go. All those 20 wine books. I mean, I would say, okay, Marlene, I'm away, and I'll phone you every second day from wherever. And, you know, I'd be away for two or three weeks, and leave her to pick up the pieces. Well, the pieces are a little heavier to pick up these days, so I need to hang around.
Thank you for this. Thank you for the book, and thank you for your friendship and being a friend to wine in Canada, especially British Columbia.
Well, thank you for the interview. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mount Boucherie Estate Winery in West Kelowna, with some of the oldest vineyards in British Columbia, dating back as far as 1968. Mount Boucherie offers a portfolio of estate-grown, handcrafted wines that pair perfectly with everyday life. You can find details on Modest Butcher, Kitchen and Market, how to shop wine online, tasting room hours and tours, and the luxury accommodation. All the details at mountboucherie.com.